Striegen's lease had been paid in full for 150 years, and as a result, station authorities had left her apartment untouched. A bribe had gotten me in to see the collection I had come for. A few five-sided tiles in colors still flower bright after 1,000 years. A shallow bowl inscribed around its gilt edge in a language Striegen couldn't possibly have read. A flat plastic rectangle I knew was a voice recorder. At a touch, it produced laughter, voices speaking that same dead language. Small as it was, this hadn't been an easy collection to assemble. Garcetti artifacts were scarce, because once Anander Mianai had realized the Garcetti possessed the means to destroy Radchai ships and penetrate Radchai armor, she had ordered the utter destruction of Garced and its people. Those pentagonal plazas, the flowers, every living thing on every planet, moon, and station in the system, all gone. No one would ever live there again. No one would ever be permitted to forget what it meant to defy the Rotch. Had a patient given her, say, the bowl, and had that sent her looking for more information? And if one Garcetti object had fetched up there, what else might have? Something a patient might have given her as payment, maybe not knowing what it was, or knowing and wanting desperately to be rid of it. Something that had led Striegen to flee, to disappear, leaving nearly everything she owned behind, perhaps. Something dangerous. Something she couldn't bring herself to destroy, to be rid of in the most efficient way possible. Something I wanted very badly. I wanted to get as far as we possibly could, as quickly as we possibly could, and so we walked for hours, with only the briefest of stops when absolutely necessary. Though the day was clear, and bright as it ever gets on Nilt, I felt blind in a way that I had thought I had learned to ignore by now. I had once had 20 bodies, 20 pairs of eyes, and hundreds of others that I could access if I needed or desired it. Now I could only see in one direction, could only see the vast expanse behind me, if I turned my head and blinded myself to what was in front of me. Usually I dealt with this by avoiding 2 open spaces, by making sure of just what was at my back, but here that was impossible. My face burned, despite the very gentle breeze, then numbed. My hands and feet ached at first. I hadn't bought my gloves or boots with the intention of walking 60 kilometers in the cold. And then grew heavy and numb. I was fortunate I hadn't come in winter, when temperatures could be a great deal lower. Savarden must have been just as cold, but she walked steadily as I pulled her along, step after apathetic step. Feet dragging through the mossy snow, staring down, not complaining or even speaking at all. When the sun was nearly on the horizon, she shifted her shoulders just slightly and raised her head.
"I know that song," she said.
"What?"
"That song you're humming."
Lazily she turned her head toward me, her face showing no anxiety or perplexity at all. I wondered if she had made any effort to conceal her accent. Likely not. On Kef as she was, she wouldn't care. Inside Rotch territories, that accent declared her a member of a wealthy and influential house, someone who, after taking the aptitudes at 15, would have ended up with a prestigious assignment. Outside those territories, it was an easy shorthand for a villain, rich, corrupt, and callous, in 1,000 entertainments. The faint sound of a flyer reached us. I turned without stopping, searched the horizon, and saw it, small and distant. Flying low and slowly, following our trail, it seemed. It wasn't a rescue, I was sure. My toss had landed wrong, and now we were exposed and defenseless. We kept walking as the sound of the flyer grew nearer. We couldn't have outraced it even if Savardin hadn't begun to half-stumble, catching herself, but clearly at the end of her endurance. If she was speaking unprompted, noticing anything around her, she was likely beginning to come down. I stopped, dropped her arm, and she came to a halt beside me. The flyer sailed over us, banked and landed in our path, approximately 30 meters in front of us. Either they didn't have the means to shoot us from the air, or they didn't wish to. I shrugged off my pack and loosened the fastenings of my outer coat, the better to reach my gun. 4 people got out of the flyer. The owner I had rented from, 2 people I didn't recognize, and the person from the bar who had called me a tough little girl, and whom I had wanted to kill, but had refrained from killing. I slid my hand into my coat and grasped the gun. My options were limited.
"Don't you have any common sense?" called the proprietor when they were 15 meters away. All 4 stopped. "You stay with the flyer when it goes down, so we can find you."
I looked at the person from the bar, saw her recognize me, and see that I recognized her. In the bar, I said that anyone who tried to rob me would die, I reminded her. She smirked. One of the people I didn't recognize produced a gun from somewhere on her person.
"We aren't gonna just try," she said.
I drew my gun and fired, hitting her in the face. She crumpled to the snow. Before the others could react, I shot the person from the bar, who likewise fell, and then the person beside her, all 3 in quick succession, taking less than 1 second. The proprietor swore and turned to flee. I shot her in the back, and she took 3 steps and then fell. "I'm cold," said Savardin beside me, placid and heedless. They had left the flyer unguarded, all 4 approaching me. Foolish. The whole venture had been foolish. Undertaken without any sort of serious planning, it seemed. I had only to load Savardin and my pack into the flyer and be off. The residence of Aralesperus Stregan was barely visible from the air. Only a circle slightly more than 35 meters in diameter, within which the snow moss was perceptibly lighter and thinner. I brought the flyer down outside the circle and waited a moment to assess the situation. From this angle, it was obvious there were buildings, 2 of them, snow-covered mounds. It might have been an unoccupied herding camp, but if I could trust my information, it wasn't. There was no sign of a wall or fence, but I would make no assumptions about her security. After consideration, I opened the hatch on the flyer and got out, pulling Savardin out behind me. We walked slowly to the line where the snow changed, Savardin stopping when I stopped. She stood incuriously staring straight ahead. Beyond this, I hadn't been able to plan. "Stregan!" I called and waited. But no answer came. I left Savardin standing where she was and walked the circumference of the circle. The entrances of the 2 snow-mounded buildings seemed oddly shadowed, and I stopped and looked again. Both hung open, dark beyond. Buildings like these would probably have double-doored entrances, like an airlock, to keep warm air inside. But I didn't think anyone would leave either door hanging ajar. Either Stregan had security in place or she didn't. I stepped over the line into the circle. Nothing happened. The doors were open, both inner and outer, and there were no lights. One of the buildings was just as cold inside as out. I presumed that when I found a light, I would discover it was used for storage, filled with tools and sealed packages of food and fuel. The other was 2 degrees Celsius inside. I guessed that it had been heated until relatively recently. Living quarters, evidently. Striegen! I called into the darkness, but the way my voice echoed back told me the building was likely unoccupied. Outside again, I found the marks where her flyer had sat. She was gone then, and the open doors and the darkness were a message for whoever would come. For me. I had no means to discover where she'd gone. I looked up at the empty sky, and down again at the imprint of the flyer. I stood there a while, looking at that empty space. When I returned to Savarden, I found she'd lain down in the green-stained snow and gone to sleep. In the back of the flyer, I found a lantern, a stove, a tent, and some bedding. I took the lantern into the building I presumed was living quarters and switched it on. Wide, light-colored rugs covered the floor, and woven hangings the walls. These were blue and orange, and an eye-hurting green. Low benches, backless with cushions, lined the room. Beyond benches and the bright hangings, there was little else. A game board with counters, but the board had a pattern of holes I didn't recognize, and I didn't understand the distribution of the counters among the holes. I wondered whom Striegen played with. Perhaps the board was only decorative. It was finely carved, and the pieces brightly colored. A wooden box sat on a table in a corner, a long oval with a carved, pierced lid and 3 strings stretched tight across. The wood was pale gold, with a waving, curling grain. The holes cut in the flat top were as uneven and intricate as the grain of the wood. It was a beautiful thing. I plucked a string and it rang softly. Doors led to the kitchen, bath, sleeping quarters, and what was obviously a small infirmary. I opened a cabinet door and found a neat stack of correctives. Each drawer I pulled out revealed instruments and medicines. She might have gone to a herding camp to tend to some emergency, but the lights and the heat being off, and those doors left open, argued otherwise. Barring a miracle, it was the end of 19 years of planning and effort. The house controls were behind a panel in the kitchen. I found the power supply in place, hooked it back in, and switched on the heat and the lights. Then I went out and got Savarden, and dragged her into the house. I made a pallet of blankets I found in Striegen's bedroom, then stripped Savarden and laid her on it, and covered her with more blankets. She didn't wake, and I used the time to search the house more thoroughly. The cabinets held plenty of food. A cup sat on the counter, a thin layer of greenish liquid glazing the bottom. Next to it sat a plain white bowl holding the last bits of a hunk of hard bread disintegrating into ice-rimmed water. It looked as though Striegen had left without cleaning up after a meal, leaving nearly everything behind. Food, medical supplies. I checked the bedroom, found warm clothes in good repair. She had left on short notice, not taking much. She knew what she had. Of course she did. That was why she'd fled to begin with. If she wasn't stupid, and I was quite certain she wasn't. She had gone the moment she realized what I was, and would keep going until she was as far from me as she could get. But where would that be? If I represented the power of the Roch, and had found her even here, so distant from both Roch space and her own home, where could she go that they wouldn't ultimately find her? Surely she would realize that. But what other course would be open to her? Surely she wouldn't be foolish enough to return. In the meantime, Savarden would be sick soon unless I found Kef for her. I had no intention of doing that, and there was food here, and heat, and perhaps I could find something, some hint, some clue to what Striegen had been thinking in the moment she had thought the Roch were coming for her, and fled. Something that would tell me where she'd gone.